Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. A very disappointed Kevin Herb.
I am?
Well, you didn't seem happy with the fact I haven't seen a lot of movies.
No, it's just the movies you haven't seen that have me a little concerned. I think you and I need to have a bonding day with the DVD player. You got a bye week coming. I'll help you hang the decorations. We'll watch some movies.
I'm going to game the bye week.
What's going to be the Steve Jones annual decorating party then?
Not as extensive.
Oh, that's sad. Buhner and I'll have to come out.
I tore all that stuff out.
Buhner and I'll have to come out and decorate it for you. We'll take care of it for you.
No, it's not going to take. It's going to take me a half hour to do. I tore all that stuff out.
What do you mean you tore it out?
I tore all the shrubbery out.
Oh, so you don't have as much to decorate is what you're saying. I got you.
Yes.
Well, that's all right. We can decorate the roof then.
Don't go up in the roof.
We'll take care of it for you. Don't worry about it.
No, I don't go up in the roof. That's dangerous. No, seriously, I won't do it. I mean, I hung shutters myself, you know, and the templates and things like that, all in the lower level, but the upper level, I hired somebody because I won't go up in the ladder like that because too high up, and it's not level in that area, so I hired somebody to come over.
Well, I understand that. I have a height issue as well, but I mean I have a height issue.
It's not a height issue. It is a steadiness issue.
No, I have a height issue.
Because the ground where you're working on is not level. So because, and I don't have a ladder. Everything in my ladder is only for flat ground. It's not adjustable.
Gotcha.
In terms of, you know, like you can adjust one leg versus the other. I don't have that, so I had to hire somebody. All right. But you're disappointed. I didn't like Star Wars.
Yeah, we just need a bonding. We just need a bonding day where we can, you can watch Star. We'll binge watch Star Wars and then binge watch Back to the Future.
Cold day in Hades, man. All right, so let's bring in Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Adam, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Good to be with you, Steve.
Adam, especially in the West, where are the points being scored in this conference?
It's a great question. Even teams like Illinois that I thought would put up more points, you know, they only had 14 last week. Purdue actually showed some offense a little bit against Michigan State, but it is much more of a defense-oriented league, defense-oriented division. You know, most of the proven quarterbacks are in the East. So it's going to be a grind for a lot of those teams out West.
Northwestern and Indiana are two interesting teams to me, because it looks to me like compared to 5 years ago, they've become more physical in the trenches. Am I seeing things right?
Yeah, I think to different degrees. I think Northwestern is a lot more farther along on the defensive side than Indiana has. But Indiana has made strides on defense, which is encouraging because they've just been so bad on that side of the ball for multiple generations, it seems. Northwestern is definitely building more around being physical. They have better athletes on defense than they've had in the past. I thought their offensive line, which has been an area of concern, took a step forward last week against Minnesota. Very impressive performance for them. And then for Indiana, you know, defensively being able to contain Ohio State for most of that game, even though Ohio State is still struggling to find its identity on offense, they're still so talented. So give Indiana some credit for that. Now we'll see how they follow it up. Can they follow it up, this week will be very, very interesting because I think their offense has some really good pieces. They're not all healthy right now, but if that defense can take a step forward, Indiana can put itself in position for bowl appearances, not just this year, but in the years to come.
You mentioned the Indiana-Ohio State game. How impressed were you, Adam, by Indiana's resilience? Because you knew Ohio State would do something, but they didn't knock them out. Indiana kept coming back.
Yeah, I think it was definitely a game that Kevin Wilson can point to and build upon. Kevin's a tough guy. He doesn't like to deal with one-goal victories, but you mentioned it. You lose, you know, your top running back, Jordan Howard, who tried to come back valiantly, but just wasn't the same guy after his injury. You lose your top quarterback, Nate Sudfeld, and you're still able to move the ball in a position to tie the game there at the end. And I would have loved to have seen them. I think they would have gone for two. They said after the game that if they scored there at the end of the game, they would have tried for the win, which would have been a very exciting play in all of college football to see what would have happened. But I was impressed that they were able to overcome some of those injuries, and that's a sign of a program that's building more depth. On offense, I think it was always there, and now you're seeing it on defense that, they have better athletes there. I think they have a better scheme, and they're making more plays now than they used to. It just used to be so easy to score in Indiana. Even earlier this year, they were struggling on defense. I think they took a step forward against the Buckeyes, but now you've got to follow it up. Now you have really some winnable games here, and they only need a couple of wins to get to that six win plateau. They've only reached that one since the early 90s. So here's where we find out about Indiana. Can they take that next step?
Adam, you also mentioned Ohio State still trying to find its offensive identity. Why do you think they're just somewhat out of sync offensively?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on. Talking to people around the league, they felt that Urban let the quarterback thing go on too long, that there should have been a decision made earlier than it was. Obviously you want to be fair to everyone, including Braxton Miller. You want to be fair to J.T. Barrett coming off of his injury. And maybe Cardale Jones hadn't done enough to really separate himself. But I think we've seen now in college football that there's benefit to just sticking with a guy and saying, this is my guy. We're going to ride this out at least until it gets real bad. And I wonder if it had been, Cardale Jones, we knew on August 10th that he was going to be the guy, if maybe some of this would have been worked out. But, they also had a play caller change with Tom Herman leaving for the University of Houston. I think that's affected them.
Yes.
I think they've gone away from some of the traditional things that Urban Meyer's been successful with. The zone replay, you don't see as much as part of that offense with Cardale Jones as you had in the past with J.T. Barrett and Braxton Miller. I think trying to work Braxton Miller in has been a challenge. So there's a lot of things going on. But it needs to get solved soon. We did a podcast earlier today, and one of my colleagues, Brad Edwards, brought up a good point that after a while, you're not trying to figure out something. You just are what you are. And for Ohio State, you don't want this to be what you are on offense. You want to evolve into something better like they did last year. There's still time to do that. But if you can't, put up an impressive number against Maryland, a team that's really struggling this week, and you get closer to facing some of those better teams later in the year, like Michigan State, like Michigan, maybe even Minnesota defensively will be healthier, then that's going to be a challenge. At some point, you are what we were seeing, and at this point, it's not a particularly good picture for Ohio State. But I think there needs to be some urgency from that offense to perform like we all know that they're capable of.
And to follow up on that, when you look at Penn State, what are they right now, and what can they evolve into?
Yeah, I think the hope, if you're a Penn State fan, is that when they get a little healthier at the running back position, that will open things up offensively. From talking to coaches, I did a piece on Christian Hackenberg a few weeks ago, and a couple of coaches said, hey, when that Barkley kid is in there, it really helps him out. And if you look back at his freshman year with Bill O'Brien there, and that certainly helped having him as a play caller, but also they could run the ball more effectively back then. So that's key for this offense, that they can rely on a physical run game, gets everybody confident around that player, whether it's the offensive line, whether it's the quarterback, they can open things up more in the passing game with the play action. But it is, kind of similar to Ohio State. At some point, this is the Penn State offense. And you're going to have to win with defense. You're going to have to grind it out. How much improvement can you really make? So I think, the hope for Penn State is that these running backs get healthy. That provides some balance in the offense. And then Christian Hackenberg and his receivers can do some damage down the field. But you're getting to a point in the season where I think it's hard to completely revamp and take a significant step forward. At some point, you are what you are, and for Penn State, you hope it wasn't what we saw last week.
I think you and I both know that Brady Hoke did a good job recruiting at Michigan. What has Jim Harbaugh done with that talent to give them the look that they have right now? Because the one loss they have turns out it's a really good team on opening night.
Yeah, the thing that I think people, you throw out the cliche all the time that you know, a new coach completely revamps the culture. That didn't happen in Michigan. Brady Hoke had a good culture there. He recruited players who wanted to be at Michigan. He had a plan that really fit Michigan. He just wasn't able to deliver it. So to Jim Harbaugh's credit, he's doing what Brady Hoke couldn't do in terms of the schemes and in terms of the development, developing those highly rated recruits into better players. One thing the coaches that would face Michigan told me is that they marry their schemes together better than almost anyone. You know, they're not a dynamic offense, but they're a ball control, power run, which they never had against, never really had with Brady Hoke. Offense where they can take some time off the clock. They can save their defense. Their defense is outstanding so far this year in all three levels, especially up front. I've been very impressed with their defensive line. And, you know, they're not asking Jake Rudock to do too much at quarterback. They're helping them out with the run game here and there. They're making more plays on defense. So I think it's really identifying what you're good at as a team at this point and catering your schemes around that. I think we're going to see just, you know, better versions of this as Jim Harbaugh goes along and has more time to work with these players and brings in higher recruits, brings in better quarterbacks. This program should just keep improving, and again, sort of fulfilling the vision that Brady Hoke never really could fulfill during his time at Michigan.
Mark D'Antonio, to me, has the definition of a program, the way he's built it. They're undefeated right now. But what do you think of them? Actually, how well are they playing right now?
They're not playing particularly well. And defensively, you could really see it from the start of the season, Steve, even the game against Western Michigan, their opener. Western Michigan moved the ball against them, and you're seeing things happen to this defense that you haven't seen for a number of years. Some people might want to say it's because Pat Narduzzi isn't there. I love Pat, and I think he's doing a really nice job at Pitt, but I think it has more to do with the personnel and maybe not having players to step in at a position like cornerback like they've had in years past.
Right.
So they're not quite at the point where they can just plug a guy in there and expect him to be a Trey Waynes or a Darquez Denard. And they've suffered some injuries this year, which has been something they haven't dealt with in the past. I think it's going to be really interesting, Steve, to see how Michigan State deals with these injuries. I think that's a sign that they've really arrived as a program, if they can overcome some of these setbacks that they've had, whether it's in the secondary or along the offensive line. The offensive line depth chart right now is a mess, and they've been able to hold up pretty well so far, but can they continue to do that? And, you know, last week against Purdue, great start on offense, and then they sort of went to sleep for the rest of the game. That's going to get you beat against a better opponent. So I'm interested to see how they respond this week against Rutgers. Rutgers gets Levante Carew back from the suspension. That will be a big help for them. But I think Michigan State is more about them and how they look in that game, because it's going to get tougher for them the following week. We know that against Michigan. It's going to get much tougher for them in a few weeks when they have to go to Columbus. So the time is now for Michigan State to start looking like a top five team again, and they haven't done so in the last few weeks.
Adam, we're just about to the halfway mark. It's week six, but there are bye weeks in there, so we're near that halfway area. Is there a fan base in America that's happy right now?
it's tough. You know, it's a year where there haven't been these kind of obvious good teams with everything going right. It's been a year, Steve, full of injuries. Major injuries around college football. Another one today, Carl Joseph of West Virginia, who's maybe their best player and certainly their best defender, he's out for the year.
Right.
So it is hard to feel just completely great about your team. Utah fans, I think, should feel great about their team.
Yeah.
Florida fans should feel really good about their team at this point. In the Big Ten, I think Iowa fans, Northwestern fans, should feel pleasantly surprised at where their programs are at about midway through the season. But it's not a year where we have one or two dominant teams around the country. It's been a lot of ups and downs already just through the first five games, both with performance and with the injury factor, unfortunately, being far too big around the sport.
Adam, it's always a pleasure. You know that. Thanks so much for the time. I enjoyed it very much.
Okay, always enjoy it. Thanks, Steve.
That is Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Still to come, Mike Miller, Times Herald in Bloomington. Tomorrow, high school football announcers talk about their big games. Plus, we'll have Doug Birdsong tomorrow. Patrick Chambers on Friday. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
We just won the Sunbury Motors Kia. It's a spooktacular sales event for a limited time only.
What does a spooky deal mean?
Really, really good and spooky.
Just stop. But yes, the deals at Sunbury Motors Kia are spooky good this month. But not because of Halloween. Kia has authorized us to provide employee pricing on all models this month. Plain and simple, you pay invoice minus all factory incentives on every model we have. That means the very best deals of the year from the dealer you already know to give you great deals year-round. Big savings on the 7-passenger Sereno SUV, the agile handling and first-class features of the Sportage, and the fuel-sipping Optima. Plus, with 0% financing available and a 10-year, 100,000-mile warranty, these deals are scary good.
Now, that's the holiday spirit!
Owning a brand new Kia is more affordable than ever at Sunbury Motors Kia on the Strip in Hummel's Wharf and at sunburymotors.com.
We're a little bit too loose in today's society when it comes to comments we're making these days. That's why I've always wanted to have a show of informed commentary, informed questions, and so forth. Now, do we succeed? At times we do, and sometimes we don't. Maybe we come up short from time to time. No show is going to be perfect. But you try to stay away from the bombastic and the ignorant. Because I've learned over the years very much so that what people know and what they think they know in many cases are two different things. I talked about the Anthony Zettel story yesterday. A fan saying to me, he says, you know, I'll tell you right now, he's reading too much of his press clippings. He's just not playing well right now. Then I calmly and politely explained the family situation to him. And he went, oh, boy, he turned ashen. That's okay. No, but it was off the air. It wasn't on the air. Here is another one of those moments. Ed Werder of ESPN, excellent reporter. It's rock solid. Took to Twitter to defend his colleague Chris Mortensen when the Deflategate thing was going on because of he became a center. What was going on as to what was reported. A Patriots fan pounced on it. First of all, I hope your entire family contracts HIV, the person wrote to Werder. Werder's response was, I think what we actually have is bad enough, but thanks for that. His daughter had brain surgery, and the man she's married to, his son-in-law, has stage 4 cancer. What's going on here? Informed opinions and informed commentary are very important. Now, obviously, you watch games and you can see games and you can make judgments for yourself. Now, that I completely and absolutely understand. You watch a game and you say, okay, how come they're not running the ball more? How come they're not taking deep shots? How come, I understand why they play that defense, why they blitz on that down. Absolutely. You're watching the game, so you have questions. But when it comes to the people involved, how well do you know them? Probably Kevin himself didn't even know about Werder's situation.
No. I wouldn't have made that comment, but I also didn't know.
No, of course you wouldn't have made that comment. Of course not. No, of course not.
I don't understand people in Twitter right now feeling that they have the authority to lambaste people on Twitter just because it's a public forum for them to speak their piece.
I mean, freedom of speech is a beautiful thing. We are so lucky in this country that we can say things without retribution. I mean, obviously, Mark has a show in the morning, Mark Lawrence, which talks about government issues. If you disagree with the policies of the Obama administration, you have the right to say you disagree with it and why. Or you may disagree with the Republican Congress in Washington. You can then explain why you disagree with them. And you have the freedom to do it without retribution. You're not going to be sent to the gulag for expressing your opinion. But with freedom of speech also comes a responsibility that comes with it. As you notice in those two examples, they said you're free to say you don't like it and also free to explain why. But it's the pithy comments. It's the trying to be funny. It's the vengeful comments. It's the comments that just strike a venom. Why are they necessary? Why? I hope your entire family contracts HIV and dies. Well,
that baffles me.
The daughter has had brain surgery, is trying to relearn how to talk and walk, and the son-in-law has stage 4 cancer. Not HIV, but seems to me on the surface bad enough, don't you think? You just don't. Okay. When you make comments like that that are personal, you have no idea what it's like for them to walk in their shoes. You don't know, just like they don't know what it's like for you to walk in your shoes. I don't understand the mentality today of, like I said, you can watch something and like the Pirates win, lose today, go to Twitter and say, hey, that's great, awesome, I love this, I love that, whatever. I can't believe he didn't make that play. That's fine. I don't care. But it's the personal stuff. There's too much ignorant stuff out there. I don't get it. Am I missing something? Am I too old, too old-fashioned? Am I out of touch? It's not the way I was brought up. It's not the way I was brought up. I was told I could only say nasty things to one person. I pick Kevin.
Happy to be here for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Freedom of speech is one of the truly beautiful things that this country has. I mean, without question. There's a responsibility that goes with it, too. Right? You know, being snarky and pithy and so forth with people. I mean, what? Okay, does that make you bigger than they are? Does that make you bigger than they are? Okay? Or does it, like, is it put them down in such a way where, like, yeah, I took the big guy, put him down? I mean, for goodness sakes, I mean, I'm, you know, your parents proud of you for doing that, or, oh, well, just that bothers me. That bothers me today. I mean, I don't mind comments. I mean, it doesn't matter. I could care less, but. Certain things, I mean, if you got an opinion, have an opinion, that's fine. If your opinion's 180 of mine, that's fine. I have no issue with that at all. Right? But the snarky stuff, come on, we got to be, you know, isn't this society better than that? I mean, this country's better than that. It's the greatest country on the face of the earth. Aren't we better than that? Than snarky comments on Twitter? Doesn't class mean something? You can ask questions and disagree and still do it with class. But texting somebody and saying, I hope your entire family contracts HIV and dies. Now the daughter has had brain surgery and the son-in-law has stage 4 cancer. I think it's got enough problems to deal with. Unbelievable. Yeah. All right, let's bring in Mike Miller, Herald Times of Bloomington. Hi, Mike. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Actually, we're heading that way over to State College tomorrow afternoon. Really looking forward to it. Love State College. How are you guys doing?
Doing really well, and we look forward to having you here, Mike. And the weather's going to be beautiful this weekend, which is the great news.
Absolutely.
Everyone, of course, wants to know whether it's in Bloomington or State College, the status of Nate Sudfeld and Jordan Howard. What do you know?
Well, all we know so far is that they've dressed for practice. I do take it that they've both been limited You know, both players, Kevin Wilson has said this week that, you know, they're kind of at points in their career where, you know, they can kind of play on Saturday without having a whole lot of time on test during the practice week. But still, you know, when you look at this Indiana offense, you know, especially in Sudfeld's case, yeah, he's been here for 4 years, a senior, but, you know, he came into the year with only 14 starts. And even last season, he was kind of getting used to a new receiving core. And that's almost kind of been the case this year, too. So, you know, yeah, he can play. If he's good to go, he can play without practicing. But I also think it's important for a guy like him to have the practice time in a week like this and get on the same page with the receivers. I mean, Indiana's offense has been outstanding for the most part. I mean, especially when you look at the box scores, when you look at the conference, you know, statistical leaders. But they've had some hiccups, too. They've been prone to, you know, not finishing drives. They've stalled a couple times in the red zone. You know, for all the big passing numbers and the big stats that this offense has accumulated over the last couple seasons, you know, it's far from perfect. So whether Sudfeld plays on Saturday, I don't think we're really going to know until about half an hour before kickoff.
Right.
But, you know, they seem to be confident, at least more so than they were last year, in backup Xander Diamant. So they got a couple options. But obviously, you know, I've said it since last season when Nate Sudfeld went down with that season-ending shoulder surgery. He's their most important player, without question, the absolute most important player to this Indiana team. You saw last season how they kind of crumbled over the second half of the year without him. He is just as important this year, make no mistake. And as is Jordan Howard, he's a big reason why this offense has functioned. So, you know, having one of those two back will certainly help. Having both back will really help. Without either of them, it could be a long afternoon.
Mike, when you look at Nate Sudfeld and the scheme that they play, there's a lot of he catches, he identifies, he throws, and some of these plays take 1.7, 1.8 seconds, literally, from snap to catch. How important is that? They've only given up 3 sacks. Is it the offensive line, or is it in part how quickly they get rid of the ball?
I think it's equal parts both. You know, this is an offensive line that Kevin Wilson's been building since he got here in 2011.
Yeah.
That was the first thing he really tried to do. I think when he got here in 2011, I don't think he had a starting offensive lineman over 300 pounds. And they've really addressed that over the last 3 or 4 recruiting cycles. They've gotten to a point where they're really too deep on the offensive line. You know, they got handled last week against Ohio State. And granted, I mean, that's a great, you know, defensive front they got. I mean, they had to take on Joey Bosa and all the guys that are around them.
And Adolphus Washington, yeah.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's still, they've looked really good. I mean, you got some big guys up there. Guys were opening holes for Jordan Howard. You know, I think it's really a product of both. I mean, this is an offense. Kevin Wilson's an old offensive lineman. He understands the importance of building up front, and they've really done that. I think Greg Frey, the offensive line coaches, you know, you ask around the country, I think a lot of people will point to Greg Frey as one of the leaders when it comes to really recruiting and developing offensive linemen. So they've really addressed that and built that, and it's, you know, it's the product of their system. And Sudfeld's a leader. There's no doubt about it. As I said, he's their most important player, and he really has a real command of the offense. I think the only real knock on Nate so far, and it's not really a knock on him so much, it's just kind of a product of where the program is right now with its skill positions. You know, still trying to get on the same page with some skill guys. You know, 2013, Indiana led the league in passing. It wasn't even close. They had a lot of really dynamic guys at receiver. They're still trying to build back to that point. I don't think they really have a dynamic guy on the outside, but they got a lot of guys who can do different things. You know, no one really is very flashy. They got some freshmen they like who can maybe be that down the road, but right now it's kind of skill position that's still coming along, and they make plays, but you know, again, it's not very flashy. So there's a lot going on with this Indiana offense, but I think absolutely it kind of starts up front with the offensive line.
I was impressed by last year when I watched Xander Diamant when I did the Penn State game. I felt, wow, he has very good skill running, good judgment running, quickness and so forth. And he showcased that on Saturday. The difference I saw in him throwing the football Saturday, I know he was only 6-14, but he was a different animal throwing the football. Fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. You know, it was really when you look back at the last 2, maybe 3 games of last season, you started to see that development. You saw it against Ohio State last November. Yeah. You saw it in the win over Purdue. I think last week against Ohio State was really an example of him picking up where he left off. I mean, he's more of a, you know, a dynamic, athletic, mobile guy, dual threat type quarterback, but he's developing arm strength. It's not anywhere close to the type of strength or accuracy that Nate Sudfeld has, but as a sophomore who came in here 165 pounds last summer, he's made some big gains in being able to sort of hit his target. I keep going back to that last play of the game that was darn near caught for a game tying touchdown. I mean, he was throwing off his back foot about 35 yards, and that sucker almost landed. So, he's definitely made some gains. And I think probably the most important part is last season when he stepped in, they didn't give him the full playbook. They gave him a very, very limited amount of plays. Frankly, that whole offense was really predicated on 80, 90 yard touchdown runs by Tevin Coleman. So, they feel comfortable. It sounds like, opening up the playbook a little bit more for him as a sophomore this year. And, you know, if in fact he needs to play on Saturday at Penn State, I think that we'll see kind of how far he is in his development and how much he can really handle from that playbook standpoint.
Mike, what Jordan Howard, you mentioned, you know, you get lucky sometimes and you don't count on a program temporarily folding. So everybody on UAB had to find a landing spot. He found his landing spot in Bloomington. He had 11 100-yard rushing games at UAB. He's different than Tevin Coleman, but does he really fit maybe even better into what Kevin wants to do compared to an outstanding back in Tevin Coleman?
Oh, my goodness. There's no question. I think from the standpoint of he allows him to be a whole lot different offensively. I think a really good example is just kind of looking at Indiana since Kevin Wilson got here. Right? You know, you mentioned it. It's a quick strike offense, you know, by and large. But with Jordan Howard, you get a guy who can really grind through defenses. He was averaging something like 7 yards per carry on first down a couple weeks ago. He's a guy who can really, really run through an opposition's front seven. And that's allowed Indiana to kind of get away at times from that quick strike, no huddle offense. They've kind of tinkered a little bit with, you know, going a little bit more methodical and taking some time off the clock, because when you have a guy like Howard, you can do that. So, you know, the no huddle's been a point of emphasis for Wilson, but I think it makes the offense even more dangerous when you can even switch tempos between no huddle and go methodical. I mean, they put together a few 5-6 minute drives, and you know, that'll wear down a defense just as much as a no huddle. So he really opens it up, and I think he gives you even more more options than you had last year with Tevin.
Mike, defensively, this team, people may not realize, Indiana's a +9 giveaway takeaway, and I think they have 48 points off of those takeaways. Where have they become better defensively?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think part of it is just they've got a few more guys who just seem to have a knack for being around the ball. I think that starts in the linebacking core. You have that's one area that's starting to get pretty deep for Indiana. On the defensive side of the ball, they got a lot of young guys, freshmen, sophomores, juniors, who they really like, athletic guys, fast guys. You know, by and large, I think it's, and this is from talking to folks who've been around Indiana football for decades, you know, the good and the bad, obviously more bad than good, but they look at this front seven and especially the linebackers and really say that this is the most athletic Indiana's been, both up front on the defensive line, which is very important, and also at linebacker. They got a lot of young guys who are fast, who just have a real knack for knowing where to be, for being around the ball. And also in the secondary, too, you have more athletes there, too. You got a lot of more guys who are faster, maybe a little bit more, they have better instincts of how to read passes, how to read quarterbacks. It's not all there. It's still very much a work in progress, but that's absolutely the reason why, you know, India has 4 wins at this point, is because they've been able to win the takeaway game, and they've gotten some interceptions. They forced and recovered some fumbles. And that's the thing with this Indiana program. I mean, ever since Kevin Wilson got here, they've really done a good job of not turning the ball over. But the one thing is, they never really forced turnovers either. They didn't really get many takeaways. Well, now they are, and they're kind of seeing what that's done. I mean, the Florida International game, the Western Kentucky game, those are games that were both won with interceptions. You know, even the Wake Forest game, I think the difference there was a 20-yard interception return in the fourth quarter. So the ability to get those takeaways and, you know, cash in, whether on offense or turn them to the end zone, that I think has been the biggest improvement and a really encouraging step for an Indiana defense that really believes they have some better days ahead.
This team, how important for Kevin would be special teams in this, especially in this game, this environment, and also big plays one way or the other? How much has that affected Indiana this year?
It has affected. You know, offensively, they haven't really had those big explosive plays. They've had some big runs by Jordan Howard, and I think that's really accounted for everything. When you when you look at the passing game, it's not a, you know, they don't get a lot of big receptions. It's a kind of offense that, you know, very quickly will dink and dunk on you, throw some hitches and some screens, and that's how they get upfield pretty quickly. But they haven't really had the big play, and that's something that they really said that was – first of all, when you look at the Ohio State game last week, that was the difference. You had those three 55, 65, 75-yard touchdown runs by Ezekiel Elliott. That was the difference, those big plays. Indiana didn't have those. They haven't had those explosive plays for some time now on offense this year. But that I think, could be the difference, and I think that's where you might miss the Jordan – where you need a Jordan Howard, where you maybe need some of these – other freshmen who have higher ceilings to kind of emerge for Indiana this week and in the coming weeks, so you can get the difference there in that that explosive play margin. So I think that's definitely a big thing for Indiana, not only this week but moving forward. It's absolutely something they've emphasized time and time again over the last couple of weeks.
Mike, finally, on your checklist, and with Mike Miller of the Times Herald in Bloomington, on your checklist, what are the swing parts back and forth between these two teams that could determine it?
Well, I think it's absolutely. One thing we've talked a lot about here is Indiana has not consistently gotten a pass rush all season long. You know, I think even going back to the summer, this is a game that, you know, folks in and outside of the program could have pointed to where, hey, you know, maybe this is a game where you can kind of get to Christian Hackenberg, force some throws, whatever you got to do. But, you know, generally speaking, Indiana hasn't done that this year. I mentioned how they like the athleticism up front. They think they got some better athletes, quicker athletes to do that kind of stuff, but they just haven't done it with consistency outside of the Wake Forest game. I think they had like 6 sacks. I think that's important for Indiana. Also, obviously, really just the presence of Nate Sudfeld. I mean, they can win with Xander Diamant, but it's just, I think it's the general confidence of the team. Look, they have confidence in Xander Diamant too, but Nate Sudfeld's, you know, he's one of the top quarterbacks in his conference. He's a pro prospect, and you saw last season how it kind of fell apart without him. Just having him back there, I think, gives Indiana confidence going into a road environment where they've never won. I think that's huge. So I think not only on the field, but just mentally, you know, knowing you have that safety blanket, Nate Sudfeld, and even Jordan Howard, too, I think just having those guys' presence is a big, big factor.
Mike, an absolute pleasure. Safe trip into State College. We look forward to seeing you.
Thanks so much for having me. And, again, I love State College. Can't wait to be there tomorrow. Thanks, guys.
Mike Miller. Herald Times of Bloomington, beat writer for Indiana. We'll come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Sure. All right. Coming up tomorrow, it'll be our high school football previews with our announcers on the Sunbury Broadcasting family of stations. And also, it will have Doug Birdsong tomorrow talking about Bucknell. Can't wait to talk with Doug. And coming up on Friday, Patrick Chambers will join us on the show. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Tonight, the Pirates play the Cubs. If you missed anything on the Steve Jones Show, Steve Jones Show podcast, Bob Flounders, Patriot News, and PennLife.com joined us today, Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, and also Mike Miller from the Times Herald in Bloomington, Indiana, all on today's show. Doug tomorrow, high school announcers tomorrow. High school announcers 3:35 to 4, and Doug at 4:06 tomorrow. Kevin does not like the concept at all of excelling when the stakes are high.
No, that's not true. That is not even close to true.
Every time I bring it up, you go, well, no, you know, you get very uncomfortable about when I talk about money on the table.
No, I think that's a big part of it, but the part that I disagree with is that is a determining factor whether you become an all-star, you get a vote, you get an all-star vote or a Hall of Fame vote. I don't necessarily think that should be the determining factor.
Actually, that's a tiebreaker. And if you don't think it's a tiebreaker, then you're not watching sports carefully. I understand guys that get to market. Like, take Craig Biggio. Craig Biggio deserves to be in the Hall of Fame because of the total body of work he's done. He did fine in the postseason and the whole thing. So I understand that. Ernie Banks deserves to be in. Total body of work. No question Dan Marino deserves to be in. But when you're talking about, okay, I've got to make a decision now between one guy or the other, I'm going to go with the guy with the postseason resume. Where the stakes are higher, the concentration is higher. Okay? If you really believe that game in May has more pressure than the game in October, I'm sorry. I'm not buying. I'm not buying at all.
I don't mind using it as a tiebreaker.
But, I mean, look, I understand your guy Bettis had, like, was the bastion of mediocrity in the postseason. I got that. Okay? So that's why I know this comes into play for you.
He's in. I don't care anymore.
He was the same in the postseason as he was in the regular season. He was 3.9 yards per carry in the regular season. He was 3.9 yards per carry. He was. Hey, look, what really bothers you is I know his numbers.
No, the fact that he's the fact that he's in the top 10 in rushing per carry average automatically should get him at least in the discussion more than it was.
He's 3.9 yards per carry. That's not good. Okay? If I have a back that's 3.9 yards per carry, we're talking about cutting him.
Yeah, but how many carries did he have? I mean, was he the workhorse? Was he the workhorse?
Nah. Look, I realize, okay, but again, that's a tiebreaker for me.
All right. I'll concede that.
Now, I'm not going to sit there and say Timmy Smith should be in and not Jerome Bettis. Of course not. Timmy Smith had one great Super Bowl. He ran for 202 yards. Other than that, nothing. All right? So I don't take it all in one game, but if I'm talking about two people that have bodies of work, and I look at the body of work, I'm not going to look to the next part. Okay, what was he like in postseason play?
I'm okay with looking at it that way.
When they handed him the ball, which guy was better? Which guy do I want? In other words, take tonight's game. If you gave me a choice tonight between ninth inning, second and third, two outs, down one, Bryce Harper or Andrew McCutchen, who do I pick?
Hutch.
No, I picked Bryce Harper. He's already proven to me he makes that hit. Bryce Harper has proven to me he makes that hit. You know how many RBIs Andrew McCutchen has in postseason play?
No, that I don't know without looking up.
Zero.